If you're passionate about sports and looking for a thrill, you need to check out the freshly redesigned XBet. They're calling it the last sports book you'll ever join. I've been playing on XBet, and they really do have it all. Whether odds on basketball, combat sports, or even betting on the next Bitcoin dip. And the best part is, when you win, you get paid quick. But it's not just about placing bets. XBet is a whole experience. They support athletes and sports shows just like ours, and they give back to the community with tons of free bets and cash prize contests. Did I mention they also have a casino now? Spin the slots, play some roulette, or even try your luck at the live tables, all from a mobile platform that lets you enjoy the fun on the go. Whether you're super into sports betting or curious about trying it out, you need a site that makes it fun and easy. That's why you've got to check out XBet. Sign up today using the promo code TOOLSHED and get a generous bonus of up to $1,000 on your first deposit. That's right, promo code TOOLSHED for free cash bonus to kickstart your journey. With so many great UFC cards on the horizon and the fact that baseball season is in full swing, there's never been a better time to play. Make your next bet, XBet.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into episode 221 of the Tool Show with Clegg and Cross, powered by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm your host, Eric Cross, coming to you from the always rainy state of Maine. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's the weather down there, bud?
Well, it's sunny and 95, so not raining. Yesterday, we had a pretty bad rain, very short period of time. Lost power, destroyed my son's swing set. It was a wild storm, but it was short, and everything's dry now because it's so hot.
Yeah, at least you get that going for you. And it definitely looks sunny. Outside is, we haven't seen the sun in, I don't know how long. It peaks through like for like a 5 minute block every 3 or 4 days. And that's about it right now. It's been very bad weather. Not a lot of good baseball weather up here right now. Hopefully it kind of dries out and gets a little sunnier throughout the week because Binghamton's coming to town. So I want to try to get out to a couple of those games if Mother Nature wants to cooperate, but she's not very happy with the state of Maine right now for some reason. I don't know what we did, but anyway, hopefully get some games this week. But we have a pretty fun episode in store for y'all today. We're doing we do these every month or so, Dynasty and Prospect mailbag episode. We put out a tweet from the Toolshed account, got a lot of good questions. vast majority of which are prospect focused. But we'll start the show with a few of the more major league dynasty focused questions, but a lot of good questions. We'll try to get to as many as we can in about an hour or so. But before we get into all that, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy the podcast, please drop that 5-star rating and review. Those mean a lot. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, Chris's Substack and my Patreon, for more work from each of us, including all of our prospect and dynasty rankings. But let's get right into it, Chris. This is a pretty fun one to start out with here. It says, in dynasty rankings, who would you rather have, Ellie De La Cruz or J-Rod? I mean, oh man, I'm going to say J-Rod personally, but Ellie's making this really damn close. And J-Rod, while he hasn't been bad this year, I'd say he's been a little underwhelming compared to what we expected for him this year after his huge rookie campaign. But also go Rodriguez here. What do you think?
I mean, it's still J-Rod for me. And until we see a full season of Ellie performing like Julio Rodriguez did last year, you know, winning Rookie of the Year, then you know, to me, I just have to stick that way. I mean, even in a down season, still has 13 home runs, 19 steals. He's still putting up elite exit velocities. Interesting thing is he's chasing more. He's striking out a decent bit more than last year. So at the end of the day, though, I still really do like J-Rod and what he brings to the table. Ellie's tools are otherworldly. He could certainly reach this level that J-Rod's at, but right now I'd still rather have Julio Rodriguez.
Yeah, I can see Ellie passing J-Rod at some point, but yeah, you still got to stick with J-Rod for right now. I think he's still, even though you know, he's been striking out a bit more, not walking a ton lately, I think he's still the safer bat. I think it's pretty safe to say that compared to Ellie at least. So we'll see how the rest of the year goes. But yeah, for now, I think we're both still going with Rodriguez. This next one here says, just traded Chris Bryant and David Robertson for Seiya Suzuki. But I said the real question is, what's up with KB? So with Chris Bryant, you know, he's been a weird one to evaluate for the last couple of years because he's never healthy, first off. He's always – obviously, he just came back off the IL after missing, what, the last 2 months or so of the season. There's always that one or two IL stints, and he wasn't even performing that well before then. The metrics aren't that great either. Like the approach is good. Like the K rate's been under 20% each of the last 2 years. You know, walks around a 9-10% clip every year for the most part. But the quality of contact metrics have not been that great the last, you know, really the last handful of years, especially the last two. Exit velo under 87 miles an hour each of the last 2 years. Hard hit rates chilling right around 30%. You know, he's not running anymore. Not that he was a huge speed guy to begin with. I mean, we all thought that move to Coors was going to be really beneficial for him, but it really has not been. And even though he's hitting decent amount of fly balls and line drives, just the impact isn't there, Chris. So I don't know, is he a guy you're looking to maybe buy right now in dynasty leagues, or are you kind of fading him at this point?
I'm pretty out on him. Like I'm not sure I want anything to do with him at this point. It's sad. And as the question says, it's sad to see his career arc kind of go this way, but Bryant's always hurt. The move to Coors hasn't really done much for him. I mean, he's slugging 362 this year. It's just not been pretty at all. And he's just turned in the wrong direction for quite some time now. So I don't know. I just don't have any faith in what he can do. And he's really, really tumbled down my dynasty rankings. So yeah, I would be fine moving on from him. And I think the question said you moved him for Seiya Suzuki, who I do like, and I'm good with that because Suzuki's definitely better underlying data than he's performed.
Yep.
And so I'm in on that.
Where do you have Bryant right now in your rankings? Is he still like top 200 for you? Because he's getting near that range for me. I think I have him around 180 right now, but that might even be a bit lower before I put out my update this week. So I don't know. It's just I'm not seeing anything in the profile that I'm like, oh yeah, that's still good. He'll turn it around. It's just pretty lackluster across the board.
263 is where I have him.
You have him even lower than I do, yeah. So, yeah, I'm probably going to move him even lower than I have him now. But, yeah, there's just nothing there. Like I said, there's nothing that's exciting me right now. But I guess a follow-up question this person had was, you know, also about Gabriel Moreno. Also, what should I do with Gabriel Moreno? How worried should I be for his long-term value? I mean, Moreno is hitting 271. I mean, we knew that the average would be pretty solid. You know, doesn't walk a lot, doesn't strike out a lot. Though I think he's striking out more than we thought, but still only 21.7%. But the power gains that we kind of, you know, he hinted at in spring training that we hoped would take a step forward this year just have not been there. And hard hit rate's okay. It's decent, 40% on the dot, but barrel rate's at 4.4%. Way too many ground balls, pushing 60% ground ball rate. Not enough fly balls, line drives. Launch angle's 3.5 degrees right now. I mean, I'm just kind of wondering, Chris, is this what Moreno is? Like, decent average, and that's basically it. Do you see any hope for, you know, anything else than what he's showing right now?
Yeah, I think we'll see the power potentially tick up with age, but right now, moving on, the contact skills are really good, and this is kind of who we expected him to be. Hit for a decent average and not have much pop. He doesn't chase much, makes his own contact at a very high rate. But in general, like, good defensive value, not as much with the bat. But if you're looking for a catcher that'll give you a solid average and not a lot of pop, like, he's it. So there is some value, but I really think this is kind of who you should expect him to be. He'll be a 270, 280 hitter. Maybe he gets to 10 to 12 home runs as he matures, but yeah, right now, I just expect him to be kind of a good batting average guy, and that'd be it.
Yep, that's kind of where I am too. Like, maybe he's, you know, a decent, you know, C2 in two catcher formats, but, you know, in your single catcher leagues, which I'm sure a lot of people are listening, that's the format people play in. I'm not really seeing any value there, and I think it's again more of a two catcher league or super deep single catcher league formats, and that's about it. Next question is about Luis Robert, who's finally, knock on wood, starting to put together a pretty good season here. Let's hope he can stay healthy. But the question is, Luis Robert Jr. is officially breaking out this year. Yes. If he stays healthy, are we looking at a potential 270, 40-20 guy, top 15 dynasty assets? I mean, maybe. I mean, I don't – he has 7 steals this year, so I don't know if he's going to run enough to get to 20. But, you know, he should get at least the 12-15 range there. And he's hitting for plenty of power. Like, his quality contact metrics are very good. 16% barrel rate especially. He's really driving the ball in the air more consistently. Trim the ground ball rate. Now, hard hit rate and EV don't really stand out, like, jump off the page there, but they're still pretty solid. But the K rate, after being, you know, around 20% each of the last 2 years, has ticked back up to close to 30%. He's at 28.8 right now, even higher than that recently. But hey, hitting 276, 24 home runs right now in 344 plate appearances. Are you buying into what we're seeing from Robert, Chris?
Yeah, he's got to stay healthy. I think that's really the biggest thing with him. But, I mean, he's running a 16% barrel rate, which is, you know, top of the line. He's 93rd percentile in the majors. But he's still having the same issues of chasing a ton, which is an issue in itself. I mean, near 40% chase rate. Right around where he's been for his whole career. His zone contact rate has taken a step back this year, and his overall contact has as well. So those things are concerning for me. I think that the batting average has a chance to regress, but he is hitting the ball so hard that it does kind of help him out, and he's putting a lot of balls in play. So it's basically like strike out or put the ball in play and hit it really hard. And so a variety of outcomes there. I think that Robert is a potential sell high. Like, if you get a top 15 dynasty asset, I think he's a top 25 guy, but I would sell him for a top 15 guy if you could.
You almost got to wonder if both him and Jimenez are sell highs whenever they get hot, because they've shown that durability is a massive issue for both of them. Obviously, they both have immense levels of talent, especially within the power department, but it's like, just when we think that, oh, is Jimenez turning into the guy we thought? Is Robert turning into that guy we thought he could be? And then they get hurt or something like that. So
yeah,
I could see both of them just being sell, and really anybody on this White Sox team whenever they start doing good. This White Sox team is just not great overall, despite all the individual talent they have on there. But all right, moving over to the prospect questions here, starting with Junior Caminero. The person asked about comps and long-term dynasty round projection. That's a good question. Where he could be overall, I guess, what's going to throw it? Do you think he can be a top 50 dynasty player at some point, Chris? Because obviously, you know, doesn't run a whole lot, probably never will, more than, you know, a guy that gives you the rogue steal here or there. But the bat is just so good and always has been. Career 316 hitter in the minor leagues. Great quality of contact. He's got 15 home runs in 63 games between high A and double A this year, hitting 331, 388, 600. I think he could be like a top 50 guy. So, you know, round 3, 4, 5, something like that, dynasty player. But what are your thoughts?
I mean, he absolutely scorches baseballs. His 90th percentile exit velocity right now is 110.5 miles an hour, which would be like, I've got to pull up the data, but in major leagues, I think that'd rank like third, probably behind just Judge and Stanton. So we're talking about a 19-year-old that's hitting the ball that hard. So that speaks a good bit of volume about the kind of player that we are looking at here with massive, massive power. It's just kind of unreal what he brings to the table. His power comes very easy. Yeah, I saw him a couple games. He had a just easy oppo home run, like low and away. He just throws the bat out there and it goes. Like, it's kind of nuts what he brings to the table. So yeah, I'm looking at you. I said 110.5 was the number for the ninth percentile. Shohei Ohtani is 110.5. Ronald Acuna Jr. is 110.8. Aaron Judge is 111.3, and Giancarlo Stanton is 112.8. So that kind of speaks to the kind of value, the power value you're looking at here. It's unreal. And he does it while making solid enough contact, posting good numbers. The move to double A hasn't fazed him a bit. I'm not sure what kind of speed we get. Like, he's not going to be a big runner, but there's a lot of power and a good feel to hit as well. So yeah, I'm in on Junior Caminero.
Yeah, how can he not be? And he actually, unlike, you know, Manzardo, who's kind of blocked, I think there's, I mean, it's not like a super clear path, but right now at third base, you know, Camino's played mostly third, some short as well. You know, third base has been Isak Paredes for the most part. And yeah, he's been all right. I'm not saying he's been bad, but is Isak Paredes really like the long-term third baseman of the future for Tampa Bay? Probably not. It's probably Junior Caminero, and maybe they, you know, make a trade or something here to, you know, kind of clear up this log jam. But I think you can see him, it won't be this year and probably not even early next year. I think we're probably looking at second half of next year. I think he's at least a year away. But you know, maybe sooner. He's up to double A now, so it could be sooner, but I don't see, obviously the Rays don't really, you know, push too aggressively, especially when they have all these other options ahead of him already. So, but yeah, I think he could be an easy top 10 dynasty third baseman. Got to hit for high average, plenty of power as well. Give you, you know, a handful of steals here and there. And yeah, I think it's absolutely probably one of the safer 19-year-old prospects you'll find out there to invest in. Although I think he turns 20 very, very soon. Yeah, July 5th. So that's on Wednesdays. Happy early birthday to Junior Caminero, about to be 20 years old. And yeah, one of the best ones out there. I think top 5, top 10 dynasty prospect, no matter where you look for the most part. So absolutely go out and get him. Let's see. Next question here. Where do you see Jace Young being ranked around this time next year? Gosh, what are your thoughts on Young? Like, I've been so up and down on Jace Young where I don't – right now he's still at semi-top 100 overall, but I don't know. He's just a hard one for me to rank. Are you in on him, or are you kind of – I mean, given your facial expression right now, I don't think you're too in on him from the looks of it.
I mean, he's okay. Like, you know, they played kind of brutal weather in the Midwest League in the first month, and he's picked it up since then. But I was never, like, overly high on him to begin with. And I don't know where I'm at right now. Like, he's, like, outside my top 100. The power's come around, like, since mid-May, but he's still hitting 235. And the strikeout rate's still near 26.5% since mid-May. The OBP is good. At least he's walking a good bit, getting on base at a higher clip. But, you know, he's fine. I'm just not crazy about him. I think he could eclipse the top 100 at some point, but I don't really see him just, like, flying up boards.
Yeah, I don't either. I can see Young getting, I think back at top 100. I mean, he's hitting for more power than I anticipated him hitting for, but he's also hitting for less average than I thought he would. And even last year, so now he's been in the minor leagues for 95 games, which isn't a huge sample size, but that's at least a decent enough sample size, 428 plate appearances. He's hitting 241. Given, you know, 367 OBP, though, which is very solid. But I think everyone kind of thought he'd be a high average guy, and where would the power be? And he's kind of been the opposite of that. He's at 13 home runs this year, only hitting 245 though, but and doesn't really run that much at all. He's another guy like him, and I'll give you, you know, a handful of steals annually, if that. So, but obviously much lesser of a bat than Cameron Arrow. So yeah, I think top 100 is possible, but he's never been a guy that I've been super in on either. I think he's definitely not nearly the bat that his older brother Josh is, for sure. Mm-hmm. Next here, this is a guy that I've wrote up a few times this year over on my Patreon. I think is still pretty undervalued here. I can see why after the down year, but Ryan Bliss is really taken off this year. And the question is, are Ryan Bliss's numbers a product of Amarillo, or should he be taken more seriously than he is? I mean, you always got to factor the environment in, of course, but I think there's a lot of exciting, you know, qualities about Ryan Bliss. And right now, absolutely tearing the cover off the ball. And in 305 plate appearances for Double-A Amarillo, slashing 349, 400, 586, 22 doubles, 12 home runs, 26 steals, been caught six times, and keeping the K rate in check right around 17%. There's a lot of, you know, again, good qualities here. I think he's hitting for more power finally than he has in the past. Contact skills, I think, are solid. I think he's around at least like a 260, 270 hitter long term. And there's good speed too. So I think there's a potential for a nice all-around offensive profile here from the second base position, where he's played most of his time this year after spending most of his time at shortstop previously. So you get a potential 260, you know, 15 homer, 20 steal guy or something like that from second base. Absolutely. And he's still a bit undervalued. He's 23, so he's a little bit older for the level. And I think he's been undervalued given the down year he had last year when he hit 214 with a 298 OBP in high A Hillsboro. So yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of legitimacy to what Bliss is doing this year.
Yeah, my concern is the park. Yeah. Amarillo ranked fourth between 2021 and 2022. This is Baseball America, Matt Eddy, his 2-year running park values. Amarillo ranked fourth of 120 minor league parks in team run context. It ranked second in team home run context, 99th percentile, and it ranked 11th in BABIP context. So, but I think you're spot on, like, maybe he's a 15 home run bat. Like, he's not going to continue to hit home runs like he has at this rate. But I do think that Bliss is useful. He has his values. I mean, look over the last month, 5 home runs, 286 average, 9 steals. Like, it's probably more in line with what you should expect. You're going to get a lot of balls in play with him. You're going to get a lot of walks. So a good OBP, like his walk rate, I know it's, you look and say 6.9%, that's not great, but it's really ticked up. Like, if you could look at a trend chart, like, it's just gone up all year, which is encouraging. Walking more and more as the season's waned on, which is good, and striking out less. There's good speed here too. So, yeah, 15 home run bat's a reasonable expectation. You got a good feel to hit and good speed as well. So as long as you temper the expectations and know that he's not going to be a 25 to 30 home run bat, then yeah, I like Bliss a good bit.
Yeah, I do too. And I think you made a lot of good points there that, you know, shouldn't go bonkers on him. Like, these numbers are inflated for sure, but I think there's still a decent profile here for fantasy purposes that I think you can get for a pretty reasonable price tag moving forward. Next question. Which prospects would you say are most likely to hit 40 plus home runs at some point in their career? There's obviously 40 home runs is a good amount, but you know, right off the bat, you know, obviously go right to, you know, first base. Well, I think Ivan Melendez certainly could, and the huge power there if you can keep the swing and miss concerns in check. Trying to think who else here. James Wood, obviously, I think could hit 40. He's obviously got the power to do so if he can get the ball, elevate the ball consistently. Let's see who else here. Obviously, Encarnacion Strand. Easy pick there. Any other names you got popping right off the top of your head here, Chris?
I think Tyler Soderstrom's never going to get mentioned in this conversation, but he's a little bit underrated. That power is there. I mean, he's hit 20 home runs this year. His EVs are through the roof. So I think Tyler Soderstrom's an underrated one that could potentially do that, but it would obviously be squeezing every bit you could out of him. But he's legit. Like, I really do believe in Soderstrom's bat. Jordan Walker graduated, but he's one. For sure. CES, obviously, up there as well.
Spencer Jones, I think, definitely could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially at Yankee Stadium.
Carlos De La Cruz with the Phillies. He's a little bit older of a prospect. Suspect hit tool, but massive power. So that's a deep cut name that could just really pop off with power.
Massive human being too. Like,
yes, 6'8".
Yep. And obviously we saw him out in the AFL. Then I saw him again. It was about two weeks ago when they were in town here in Portland. And I was seeing him in the on deck circle. I was like, man, that is a that is a sizable, and obviously more so. He's not like big. Like, he's still kind of lanky for his size. So we'll have to see him fill out a bit more. But
yeah,
that's definitely a very fun prospect for sure. If there's any other names I want to throw in here? I mean, a lot of names I'm seeing here are like 30 home runs. Yeah, maybe Kjerstad. Maybe. I don't know, but 40 is a bit high, but Kjerstad's a guy I have like as like a potential like mid-30s home run bats. But what about the guy that everyone's talking about right now? You and I both tweeted about. You think Sebastian Walcott? I know it's super far away, but just like, let's just dream for a second. You like with that the power he's already showing, the frame, the size, the frame, the projection left on the frame. You think there's a shot everything clicks and he gets up to that range?
Yeah, I mean, he's a six or young 17-year-old putting up 110 EVs is
right.
I thought of another one, Lazaro Montes. He put up a 118 yep. mile an hour EV yesterday.
Yeah, I wrote him up today. I wrote both those guys up today. Yeah, I wrote Walker up yesterday and Montes up today. That was his first home run of the season yesterday. And yeah, he's a sizable human being as well. Very big, strong, athletic guy. A lot of you think let's just throw Dylan Cruz in here. You think Dylan Cruz is a guy that gets up to 40?
I don't think so. I mean, it's possible, but he's going to just put a lot. I mean, he's going to probably have 40 doubles and 30 home runs, a ton of extra base hits. But
yeah, I think low to mid 30s home runs for him too. But obviously, incredible bat overall. Actually, here's another one that could. Next question: how far is Yankiel Fernandez going to climb by the end of the season in dynasty ranks? I mean, he's already climbed a decent amount here. Like, I currently have him at 24 right now, and he is just rising, every week. I mean, I usually tinker with my rankings every couple of days, and usually on the weekend do a little bit more work on them when I have more time. But he is already approaching top 20. Yeah, he's a bit aggressive, but has the contact skills to back it up, doesn't strike out a lot, and has pretty impressive raw power and has the frame that you can probably add a bit more bulk to that. So I think there's definitely a chance he could be, I mean, do you think he has a chance he could crack top 10? I think he can get close to that.
I don't know. I'm not as much into this profile. It presents a lot of risk and he's cut the chase rate. He's proved me wrong to this point so far. I mean, hitting in Spokane, like all those guys, all those Rockies high hitters that are just taking off are a product of a massive, massive park boost. As I mentioned with Amarillo, like Spokane also plays way, way up for home runs. So it's a huge home run park. And yeah, I mean, Fernandez has big power. I don't think we've ever doubted that. But also, I just have concerns with the batting average. Like, what's the floor as he moves up and faces better pitching? It's a small sample, but he's running a 39% strikeout rate in Double A. And I have concerns that he's just going to swing and miss too much against good pitching, because that's kind of what we've seen in a high chase rate. Doesn't pick up spin that well. So I do have a few concerns about Yankiel Fernandez as he really moves up. And even with the tear that he's been on this year, like, I think he still grades as like a 40 hitter, and that kind of presents some risk. So his swing and strike rate's so high. Like, his swing and strikeout rate was nearly as high as his K rate, and that just doesn't exist. Like, that doesn't happen.
Yeah, right.
So, like, there's a lot of regression that's coming, and there's good power, but there's a lot of risk. Like, I heard somebody throwing a Yordan Alvarez comp, and I was wanting to be like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, that's just too much.
Yeah, I saw that too. I think it was on Twitter. And that's a bit much, because obviously Yordan is one of the best pure hitters in baseball. And I don't even think if everything clicks for Fernandez, he's up to Yordan's level, either in the hit tool perspective or the power perspective. But yeah, that's the thing with him is, since he doesn't run at all, he's got one steal this year and two attempts. He needs, both the hit tool and the power to be there. And obviously the power's there. I don't think there's any question about that, but where's the hit tool wind up? That's to be the huge X factor. Is he going to be a potential top 50 fantasy guy? or just one of those guys that hits for 230 with good power that you can find very easily these days. That's definitely the X factor, because he, again, like I mentioned, like Chris mentioned, he's very aggressive. So we'll see how that pans out. So far striking out 14 times in 9 games, double A, but hitting 281 with 4 home runs and 36 plate appearances. So, you know, kind of a mixed bag so far at double A level. I'll be able to see him later this year, hopefully. We'll kind of get some live looks at him, but definitely exciting, but definitely a flawed profile as well. So we'll see where he goes the rest of the season. Next one, please discuss how to view Jackson Chourio with him playing in the Southern League. What numbers would you expect out of him if he was in the Southern League? And I think kind of like a two-parter, I kind of grouped another one up here. Who could be this year's quick rise like Chourio? Could it be Roman Anthony? Well, I'll let Chris wax poetically about Roman Anthony. Even though he's a Red Sox prospect, Chris is the one kind of leading the Roman Anthony hype train right now. But let's start with Chourio, though.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You know, where are you at with Chourio right now, Chris? Because, you know, obviously he's still incredibly young playing in double A. See, when does he turn? He turned 19. Yeah, just in March. So yeah, he'll be playing the entire season, 19 years old in the double A Southern League. And the numbers haven't been, you know, as good as last year, but that's kind of hard to expect from a kid like that. But hitting 252, 309. 407 in 68 games, 10 home runs, 22 steals, only been caught 3 times. So it's a decent approach, keeping the K rate in check. And the walk rate's kind of around 8% or so. Again, kind of a decent showing, but not as good as last year. So what are your thoughts right now on Chourio?
I'm not the least bit worried about him. He's shown a lot of good things. He's been picking it up as of late and been pretty hot at the plate. But again, we're talking about someone who just turned 19, who's in double A, facing pretty advanced hitting, as you said, in the Southern League. And I don't think there's like substantial evidence of how it like actually affects like hitters. We don't even know how it's really affecting pitchers other than it's giving them more ride on the fastball. It's giving them less control of the fastball too. So in reality, Jackson Chourio is probably getting less pitches to hit because the way changeups are moving, the way fastballs are running and riding, like he's just not getting good pitches to hit. Despite that, he's running a 21.8% K rate, which is literally in line with what he was in high A last year. And if you remember, for like the most of his time last year was in single A, and he struck out 28% of the time. So I'm actually pretty thrilled with these results that he's cut his K rate that much against this good competition, plus that ball. That's pretty substantial to me. There's been a lot of things kind of working against him. I mean, he's running a lower BABIP, I'd say at 293 for this kind of profile. While 293 is close to league average, this kind of profile that hits the ball hard with speed is somebody that's going to run higher BABIP than that. In a general sense, I'm fine with what Chourio's doing. I'm not wavering on him at all. They're changing balls like this week, so we'll see what he can do. And I think you're going to see a big difference in second half Jackson Chourio versus the first half Jackson Chourio.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I wish they would just keep baseball as the same.
Like, I know.
It's not just at major league level. They're doing it in the minor leagues too. It's, you know, find something and stick with it. I hate all the changes and how it's even different from league to league. You know, some leagues using the tacky ball, others aren't. It's just, I hate all these changes. But yeah, I'm not. And while I think I have been slightly like a smidgen lower than most on Chourio, obviously this is still a no doubt top 10 prospect. No doubt, you know, potential all-star caliber player. And the upside is absolutely there. He's still only 19, which is insane to think about that he's doing all this as a 19-year-old and facing very much advanced pitching for him. Like, average age is about 4.5 years older than he is. So, yeah, I'm not really worried at all about Cherry. I think he's still a potential all-star caliber player and top 10 dynasty prospect, no questions asked. Now, do you think the next Cherio, I mean, different profiles. I think I remember seeing you say that you see a lot of similarities to Roman Anthony that you saw with Evan Carter this time last year or something like that. So, again, just wax poetically about Roman Anthony because the dude is absolutely a stud in the making.
Yeah, I don't know what else he really needs to prove at this point. Like, he's just flying up boards and is really, really good. I'm not sure. I'm going to try to talk to him and see this week. They're at home. They've been on the road for 2 weeks. Like, did somebody adjust something in his swing? Because he is lifting the ball much more. Home run to fly ball rate's obviously quite high. And I think it's also important to realize, like, he was in a major, major pitcher's park in Salem before he got the bump. So that could obviously be a difference, too. Greenville plays a lot more neutral. Also interesting, he's been out of the lineup for 3 straight days, so I'm not really sure what's going on there. But that does have me a bit concerned. But in a general sense, yes, a healthy Roman Anthony, pending that everything's good there, he's going to really fly up boards. I mean, he's got a strong feel for the zone. He makes a ton of good contact. He hits the ball really hard. I'm all in on Roman Anthony. So I would say that Sebastian Walcott is probably the one that makes the Jackson Cherio jump, though.
Yeah, I think that's definitely possible. And maybe you see a guy like, you know, Rainer Arias or one of the other DSL guys we talked about making a pretty big jump, though. Obviously, Walcott being at the complex level now and absolutely mashing since he got the call there. And I think – what was it? There was another question about – yeah, Walcott right there. Where is Walcott in your guys' rankings? I mean, right now, I just, you know, been kind of tinkering with mine as I always am. And I moved him up. See, currently he is, where'd he go? 120 right now. I don't know. So he's 110 right now. And, you know, rising every few days. So I think the time I put up my next update, which for my prospect rankings will be after the draft. So I can get all those guys in there. There's a good chance he's probably inside my top 100 by the next update.
I agree. I'm right there with you. He's not far outside. I'll update again. I just update it, but I'll update again post MLB draft. And I think that he will be in the top 100 by that point.
Yeah, especially if he keeps doing what he's doing now. And yeah, the upside is there for him to be the end of the season, Chris. You think top 50 is possible end of the season?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think some may go insanely like high on him and it might be too high, but yeah, top 50 is a good expectation.
Yep, I'm right there with you. Next question here on Jacob Mizierowski. I got to slow down when I say that name there. See the question. I just lost my thought here. There. On your last pitching prospect pod, I don't recall you talking about Jacob Mizierowski. Please break him down. So, obviously, great stuff. And this year, 2.34 ERA in 13 starts between low A Carolina and high A Wisconsin. 2.34 ERA, a 0.95 whip, striking out a ton of batters, 66 strikeouts and just 42 in a third innings, but also has the 21 walks, which that command and control is like the one area of his game that really needs some refinement. But Chris, like, this is a potential top 10 pitching prospect, I think, if everything clicks with him and he can show some better command of his arsenal and more strike throwing ability.
Yeah, I think he's already in the top 10 for me. He's top 50 overall. I'm way in on Jacob Mizierowski. He's been absolutely stellar. His arsenal is just that good. And, you know, I don't, those kind of guys, the only thing I'm afraid of is that his arm falls off. Like, that would be my biggest fear, is that he just gets injured and has to have TJ or something. But the fastball slider combo, I think, are arguably both 70. He had a really good interview on MLB Pipeline last week. I think I was listening to that and just talking about how he pitches, the changes that he's made, what he did. And it's just pretty impressive all around.
I think the only worry is with him is that he needs surgery at some point. When you throw that hard, there's certainly concerns, but it's an elite arsenal with a 70 fastball, 70 slider. He's mixing in a curve now some that's really good and the changeup at times. So like even with subpar command, like when your stuff's that good, it just plays up. So
yeah,
Mizorowski is legit.
Didn't he have a surgery already? Or was it, I can't remember what he had.
I don't know.
He had like a minor, not like, obviously not Tommy John, but
yeah,
minor surgery or something. But yeah, he's already missed some time. So yeah, definitely the, you know, if you can stay healthy, that's the big thing. Well, with any pitching prospect, but especially a guy that's shown, you know, some durability issues already. But I just pulled up and filtered to my pitching prospect rankings here. It actually has him higher in terms of pitching prospects than I thought. He right now is my number 17 pitching prospect, but right in a cluster. Number 16, right in a cluster with Brian Wu, Carson Wisenhunt, Tink Hens. It's right in that kind of tier three or so of pitching prospects. So, yeah, definitely could see him rising up even further. And a few of these guys are actually going to graduate pretty soon here. So, yeah, I think he could be top 10 for me pretty quickly as well. Definitely a lot of stuff there. And you got to feel even better about him being in a good org that's for pitching development with Milwaukee and all the success they've had over the years, especially the recent years with all those guys. So, yeah, definitely got to go out and get now for sure. Are you guys buying low? Oh, this one I should have put up the top. I totally skipped over this one. Are you guys buying low in any of the following shortstops? Tim Anderson, Andrés Giménez, Ahmed Rosario. Not really. I don't know. Are you buying in any of these three guys? Like Anderson, this looks absolutely lost. I was already lower on Giménez than most heading into this season. I think he's still a decent, you know, shortstop to have, but I don't think he's a bounce back to what he was. And I've never been a big Rosario guy either. So, and I guess if I will give a blanket answer, I'm gonna say no to all of these three.
I'm a no on all of them as well. I mean, just the profiles are not really what I look for in fantasy bats because they all run risk in the sense of where you chase a lot, like in Rosario's case, and don't have any kind of power. Giménez also chases a ton and doesn't hit the ball hard at all. I mean, he's running an 83.9 mile an hour average EV, a 3.5% barrel rate. Ahmed Rosario is running a 2.1% barrel rate. That's horrific. Tim Anderson looks terrible, as you mentioned, and he was one of the safest bats for a long time, but he's always presented the risk too because he swings so much and doesn't take walks. Chase rate's high, doesn't hit the ball hard, so I'm out on all these, actually.
Yeah, I think I am too. If I had to buy in a one, I guess Giménez, but I wouldn't pay a lot to do so. All right, back to the prospect questions here. I feel as if Luis Angel Acuña is a bit underrated when it comes to most prospect rankings. Not if you look at mine, at least. Will his bat not play in the bigs? How about the speed? And what's your guess at his ETA/playing time outlook with the Seager, Semien, Jung three-headed monster intact? Now that right there, that last part is a great question because I don't know. I don't know where he ends up on the diamond, we shall see. But in terms of the player himself, and I've always been pretty high on Acuña. I currently, let me clear this filter here to go back to my entire rankings. I currently have him 27th right now, sandwiched between two pitching prospects in Tiedemann and Gavin Williams. So I'm definitely a believer in the bats. You know, I think there's more power there than he's shown in games. The raw power definitely is above the game power right now. And so I've seen him take batting practice, seen him hit some absolute tanks out there in the AFL. So I do think there's more power in there. Like the, you know, bat speed is elite and he's got good contact skills, there's plus or better speed there as well. So if he can tap into that game power more consistently, I definitely think there's an impactful fantasy player there. Just what position is that going to be at? Not really sure.
I would bet he gets traded, honestly.
I could see that, yeah.
Because there's no room. I mean, this middle infield's locked up for a long time. I'm not really sure where else he could fit. I mean, they've tried him in center field one game, but I don't see him playing center field. He's actually a really good glove at shortstop, which makes him extremely valuable. That's what impressed me the most about him when I've seen him live and in the AFL last year was his glove. And, you know, there's a good feel to hit. He makes good contact. the power's fringe average, but like you said, he has some big BP sessions and the speed's really good too, and he's efficient on the base pass. So yeah, I mean, Acuna's really solid. I would guess that he is traded, maybe traded at this All-Star break or the trade deadline. I think that it would be a smart move for Texas, who is playing really good, to beef up their team to win now and get Acuna a chance to step in somewhere and potentially get some playing time as early as next year in a major league club that he's not going to get anywhere else. So now I'm very high on him. He's easily a top 50 guy for me in Dynasty. His bat will play in the bigs. He's an elite runner, and I would guess that he debuts mid-season next year.
Yeah, I could see that too. And obviously Texas being in the hunt there for the postseason, I could definitely see them trading him for, I don't know, an outfielder or some pitching, probably some pitching, maybe some bullpen help. We'll see. But in terms of the player himself, yeah, I'm definitely very much in on Luis Angel Acuna for sure. Next question here. How do the big rookie league risers, and they put in parentheses, Rainer Arias, Sebastian Walcott, Wellbin Francisca, and Luis Guanipa compared to others at higher levels like Xavier Isaac, Roman Anthony, and Yankiel Fernandez? Also, where does Dion Jorge stand compared to these names? Rarely hear him mentioned alongside them. What are your thoughts on that one, Chris?
Well, I mean, the other guys are doing it in, you know, full season ball, so there's a big difference in the pitching quality. And so right now I can't go as high on the rookie ball guys as I can Anthony, Isaac, and Fernandez. And I bumped Isaac up a decent bit because he's been, you know, the metrics and the data have been extremely good on him. And he's finally turning that power into home run power. With those four, I obviously think Walcott could be the biggest helium, but Francisca is going to be really solid. I like Guanipa and Arias quite a bit as well. The question about Dion Jorge is the fact that he's 20 years old and he's still at the complex. Like, you have all those guys that you mentioned, like Anthony's younger than him and he's in high A. Fernandez, I need to confirm. I don't think he's younger than him, but Xavier Isaac is younger than him as well. So, yeah, I mean, Fernandez is the same age in double A, and you've got Dion Jorge at the complex. So that's why he doesn't get talked about as much and get as much hype, because he's beating up on terrible pitching and he's had three stints in rookie ball to this point. So I think there's more concerns than what we've seen with Jorge. Yeah, he's solid. I think he'll move up. He's moved up for me already. Good hit tool, solid in the field. But I just think the fact that he's beating up against bad pitchers doesn't really do much for me.
Yeah, no, that's pretty fair to say there. So yeah, he's intriguing. I think we talked about him with Alex Jensen a couple episodes ago in our kind of rookie ball standouts episode. So you want to hear about him and a lot of more of these guys. I recommend checking that episode out. But yeah, he is a kind of a step below the Arias, Walcott, Francisca, Guanipa kind of tier, so to speak, in terms of the rookie ball guys. Like you mentioned, Chris, he's a little bit older. And these guys are younger, doing it at the same level. But so I wouldn't put him right on their level yet. In terms of the older guys, I mean, I think it's just a matter of how much you want to, you know, buy into the Arias kind of quartet, how high you want to bump up those guys in rankings, is kind of your philosophy on these DSL standouts in general. Because obviously the upside is immense with all these guys, and we're seeing that now. But it comes down to, like, Fernandez, obviously he's up to double A now. Anthony in high A, and Isaac. Is Isaac in low A or high A right now? I think in low A.
Yeah, he's been in low A. Feel like he got a bump, but maybe he didn't.
Well, low A or high A. So obviously these guys are, you know, a year to 2 years probably ahead in their development. But, you know, I think the upside is, you know, the upside for these guys is to get up to this level. I think that's where we're talking about Arias and Walcott and all them. They can get up to the level that Isaac and Anthony and Fernandez already are. Like, I think all of these guys have top 25 prospect upside. Jorge, probably not that level, but I still think he's a pretty solid dynasty target as well. Next one here, another MLB one I missed. Sandy Alcantara, Alek Manoah, and Mike Soroka's values as buy low pitchers for dynasty. Hypothetical offer for each. It's hard to think of offers just because of, you know, every league is different, every manager is different. But in terms of their buy low values, I mean, I'd still be willing to buy low on Sandy for sure. I mean, Do I think he's a bounce back and be a top three arm? Like we're kind of valuing him before the season. Maybe not, but a lot of his metrics this year compared to last year aren't that far off outside of the, you know, bat missing. Like the whiff rate is down by a decent amount. Obviously the K rate subsequently down as well. But you look at a lot of the rest of the, you know, contact metrics and whatnot, same exact zone contact as last year. Chase rate's only down 0.6%. Now whiff rate's actually up 0.3% overall. So like, there's a lot of decent things still in the profile for Sandy. So I think he's a bounce back to a degree, you know, at least better than what we saw this year. Maybe he's more of like the guy we saw from like 2018 to 2021 as opposed to the 2022 Sandy. The other two, I don't know. Like, it's good to see Soroka back. At least I'm sure you feel that same way, Chris, as an Atlanta fan. I've just never been super high on him because it was, you know, he's yet to show that he can miss bats consistently. If he can, I'd be more willing to buy in. And Manoa, I mean, if dirt cheap, I guess, but there's so much wrong in that profile right now, and that he needs to correct. So he's not really one I'm looking to invest right now. Let's get him for, again, very dirt cheap in dynasty leagues.
Yeah, it's a tough one for me. I'm not buying Manoa at all. Soroka is a good buy. I think he'd probably be the cheapest of any of these. So I think he's a good buy in that sense of if the cost is low enough, then yeah, I would take a shot. But like Soroka's never going to be an ace. He doesn't strike out enough guys. And hopefully you know that going into it. But so Soroka could be a solid arm. I think we forget that he was a sub-3 ERA, and it's a 20 and 21-year-old. Actually a 19 and 20 year old, sorry, in his first two seasons of his career. So first 200 career innings, sub-3 ERA, and he was 19 and 20. So like he could be really good, but he may not provide the Ks you want. So I would say Sandy will be okay. Sandy Alcantara will be fine. I would buy him, but I think his cost will probably be the highest. But if you get him in a reasonable cost, yeah, I would do it. Like if you could get Sandy Alcantara for like a top 75 dynasty asset, then yeah, I'm not really paying anything like in my top 200 for Soroka. And like I said, I'm just not touching Manoa personally.
Yeah, I got to see Manoa actually get back to doing something positive, though. I believe he was going today in
Double A.
Yeah, and I was going to, it's super rainy. You know, they might have gotten rained out. I don't know. Let me double check that real quick. Pull up the box score here. Oh, that's tonight?
Interesting.
Oh, that's a 7. That's a 7:05 start. That's interesting. I could have sworn it was a 1 o'clock game. So, hey, maybe I still can go up after we get done recording. It's currently 4:35 p.m. East Coast time. So, maybe I do have some time to make it. Though I probably won't go up with this weather. It's probably gonna be a pretty miserable game to be at. But yeah, I just don't see Manoa being a guy I'll ever be looking to. And I was even lower on him to begin with, even when he was top three Cy Young. I was not really fully buying into that level. Can he bounce back? Sure. Okay. Is he going to be absolutely terrible and have a lost career from here on out? Probably not, but I don't think he's going to get back to anywhere near what we saw coming into the season. Next one here. Any valuation changes, rise or fall, with Jonathan Clase, Drew Gilbert, Roman Anthony, who we already discussed, and Adele Amador. You know, Gilbert, Chris, has been really struggling at Double A since his promotion there. Like, you know, contact has not been there. K rate has really kind of skyrocketed there. You have any concern with Gilbert right now, or are you just kind of waiting for him to adjust to the level?
I mean, he's showing some good things. He's got a 354 OBP, walking 17% of the time, striking out 18% of the time in Double A. So the K rate's down. I think you're just seeing some natural regression because he was, and we'll mention this with a couple of the guys, they were in massive hitter-friendly parks. Asheville is one of the best hitters parks in the minors, and he was there in high A, so that obviously affected him a good bit. I mean, just look at the home run to fly ball rate, 26.1% to 4.5%. Like, it's just stupid, like, what he's doing with similar batted ball distribution. At the end of the day, this all balances out. Gilbert's shown some positive things, so I am okay with him. Class A is another thing. I mean, great hitter's park. He's honestly in a great hitter's park now in Double A, but his contact rates have always kind of scared me off, and why I was hesitant to put him in my top 50 even, because his contact rates are 40 grade at least. Good speed. The power did improve this year, but the hit tool concerns me. We talked about Anthony. Yeah, I mean, he's moved way up. Love Anthony. Amador is another one where don't be fooled by the power because of Spokane, his home park, but his bat to ball is elite. His eye at the plate's really good. So, yeah, Amador's a top 20 prospect for me.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think I said that Gilbert's K rate was skyrocketing. I meant to say Class A's rate was K rate was skyrocketing. Yeah, Gilbert, I'm not. And someone asked me about this in Discord the other day. I'm not like overly worried about Gilbert. I kind of held pat with him in my rankings. If this continues another month or two, then I'll probably slide him down a bit. But I'm still very much a believer in the guy that we saw last year after the draft in that small sample size. Guy we saw at Tennessee in college, and the guy that we saw earlier this year in High A Asheville. So I definitely think that he's still a top 25 caliber prospect. Yeah, Amador is absolutely underrated because he doesn't have that one huge flashy tool, but it's plus hit tool, great approach. He has more walks and strikeouts for his minor league career. And a guy that has enough power and speed that he could flirt with 2020 seasons for sure. So, yeah, he's absolutely top 25, top 20, I mean, maybe even a top 15 guy here before too long for sure. So definitely – I think he's still a great value target as well. And I think Roman Anthony is still, I mean, the hype train is starting to take off with Anthony, but do you think, Chris, with Anthony, that the perceived value is still lagging behind with Anthony a little bit, or do you think that's starting to catch up?
I think it's still lagging. I'm not sure why, because I've been talking about him for a year now, but it's lagging. You can get him at a really affordable cost.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure like back when we were doing our top 100, FYPD rankings over at Fantrax last year, and then we split up the player write-ups. I'm pretty sure, yeah, you wrote I was trying to pull it up real quick. I couldn't find it, but if I recall correctly, you wrote a very glowing little blurb about Roman Anthony, and that was again like about a year or so ago now. So
right. Yeah,
you tried to tell him, Chris. Everyone could have got him at a reasonable price tag now, but that's back then. But now that's probably not going to happen. Next on the list here, why isn't Colt Keith being discussed as a top 10 prospect? Dude flat out rakes at every level, and every offensive metric supports it. Yeah, he does. And I put him in my top 25 right now. I mean, top 10, I think is possible, you know, but for a guy that doesn't have a ton of speed and doesn't, like, I don't think he's have more than like a handful of steals every year. It's hard for those guys to get in the top 10 for me. And if they do, it's probably right around 10. Like we saw, you know, Josh Young get up to that range. So I think Colt Keith could as well. And absolutely, he's been mashing this year. 63 games, 332, 400, 599 slash, 18 doubles, 16 home runs, 28 walks to 64 strikeouts, and 295 plate appearances. That's a 21.7% walk rate. And we're on a 9.5%. I mean, you know, 9.5% walk rate, 21.7% strikeout rate. Now up to AAA, where he's already got two home runs in four games, three walks to one strikeout. I mean, he is absolutely just, you know, a potential bit of the older bat in the making. Guy can hit for average, hit for power, like a 280 type of hitter with 25 to 30 home runs. And we'll see where he ends up. He probably third base, but he has played a little bit of second base as well. I'd be lying if I said I won't want to see him end up at second base, but probably third base. That's where he's played probably 80% of his games or so in the minor leagues and dating back to his days in college as well. Not college, just the minor league, excuse me. But yeah, Colt Keith, absolutely top 25 for me. And I think top 10 is possible, Chris.
Yeah, I tweeted the other day he was top 10. So I think he's what Kyle Manzardo was last year.
Yep.
And so I put him top 10 at this point. He's legit. So I don't have any qualms with that at all.
Where do I have him? I have him 18 right now. Okay. Yep, so not far off. He's right in the Westberg, Pete Crow Armstrong, Marcelo Mayer range. So absolutely could be top ten right now. Like back in my top 10 is, you know, guys like Encarnacion Strand, Churio, Lawler, Cowser, Manzardo. All those guys are right there, and could be putting Dylan Cruz up there. I think Wyatt Langford is going to be very high in my rankings as well. Definitely top 15 or so. So there'll be a nice little cluster there. But yeah, top 10 is definitely possible. But I think this is going to wrap us up for today. I think we didn't get to every single question, but we'll try to answer those on Twitter. But thanks to everyone for tuning in this episode. Thank you for all the questions. They were a lot of fun to answer. Hope they were informative and helped out all the listeners. And make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, Chris's Substack, my Patreon, for more work from each of us, including all of our rankings, of course. And join us again next time. But until then, everyone take care.
driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.